Well, good morning and welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your calls and your questions. Just a little bit going on this week, just a 1,000-point drop on Monday, and then a 1,000-point gain between Wednesday and Thursday, approximately. Just the most volatile week we can ever remember in the history of the world, certainly point-wise, because the Dow Jones is at a much higher level today than it was back at the bottom of the financial crisis. So 200 points today isn't what 200 points was 6 years ago. But even on a percentage basis, Wednesday and Thursday were the two back-to-back was the biggest percentage gain we may have ever seen in the market just in 2 days. So really just a tremendously volatile week. But of course, that followed a day where some are calling it a mini flash crash, but it was pretty ugly on Monday morning. Futures were down 400, then 5, then 6, then 8. And when the markets opened, everyone was hitting the sell button all at the same time. And we saw markets down 1,000 points, almost 1,100 points at one point. Then we ended up net negative, but then Tuesday morning, we were up 400 points. In fact, during the morning through midday, we were up 400 points. And then we trailed off and finished down 200. It was a 600-point swing. So a wild ride this week in the markets, to say the least. So we were fully in correction mode this week. Fully in correction mode. At the worst level, the S&P 500 was down over 12%. And then, of course, we just had, so Wednesday, Thursday, markets rose a full 6%. That's the largest two-day percentage gain ever. For the week, Dow rose 1.1%. S&P 500 rose 0.9%. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, which, again, an important barometer of fear, dipped under 2% because people were buying bonds with two fists. Hey, I need to get safety, so we're going to buy bonds, and it's going to push the yields down. Remember, prices are inverse to yields. We buy up bonds, yields go down. Treasury, 10-year treasuries went below 2% at one point during the week. Today, by Friday, they finished at about 2.2%. So just a tremendous amount of movement across, whether you talk about bonds or stocks or energy. We had a day where I remember thinking to myself, listening to one of these financial channels, I think it was probably Wednesday, when oil fell all the way down to $38 a barrel. And I'm thinking to myself, and it was the same day that this big study came out that said that over the past year, traffic in the United States has been the worst it's ever been in recorded history. And we're spending millions of dollars in gasoline just sitting in traffic, standing still, going nowhere and burning fuel. Then I'm thinking to myself, here we are at $38 a barrel. I literally to myself thinking, is oil just going to go to zero? Is it just going to become free? Is it that bountiful? Is it just that much of it? Well, when you get to that point in your head, you're logically sitting and you're thinking, it seems to be going down every day. Interestingly, we get to a point where then very quickly the next day and through the end of the week, oil rallied almost up 10% in one day. We saw some of these oil companies up 15, 20% in one day. So the market is clearly trying to find a balance. It's trying to find equilibrium somewhere. We still don't know where that is because it's not normal to have swings that are this gigantic. We haven't figured out this equilibrium just yet, but I think we're getting close to finding some sort of stable ground here. The GDP numbers for the second quarter were revised up. 33.7% is what supposedly the U.S. economy grew in the second quarter. The first estimate of that is 2.3%. So this was a heavy revision north for economic activity in the first quarter. And what's so interesting about GDP, just remember, it's extraordinarily backward looking. It doesn't tell us anything about what's going to happen next quarter. So you put no faith or stock in a 3.7% number. It might sound great, but it's irrelevant because the market cares about what's going to happen over the next 6 months and the next year. Again, oil prices up 10% on Thursday. It's the biggest one-day percentage rise since, again, the financial crisis. Part of that is short covering. meaning that people have sold short stock or oil or oil-related in commodities, and they had to cover shorts and buy back, and that drives prices back up. So for the week, crude oil rose 12% to $45 a barrel. So there's an awful lot happening in the world that we live in, and I understand that. And I went back and I wanted to find out, and I talked about this in the first hour, and I think it's we've got to cover this again, because the question you're asking yourself here as an investor isn't, last Sunday I talked about, hey, this is how long it takes to get come back from corrections. But as great as that sounds, and if you really look historically, it only takes on average about 4 months to come back from what are just considered corrections, 10, but not more than 20%. Let's call them garden variety. They're still painful, but they're not full-blown bear markets. It takes a lot longer to come back from a bear market. On average, it takes 2 years, 24 months. That's a much more painful healing process to get back to where we were. And of course, during the financial crisis, it took longer than that. And it took longer. Some of the calamitous markets we've been through in the last 15 years, it's taken even longer than that. But again, we're just talking historical average here. The study I did and we talked about last Sunday, these were historical averages going all the way back to 1965. So 50 years of market history on average, 4 months to come back from a correction, 2 years to come back from a bear market on average. But fundamentally, what I'm trying to figure out, and I'll ask you and we'll talk this through today, is that fundamentally, we also understand that when the underpinnings of the economy start to crumble, then the type of corrections that we're going through right now, they turn into something worse. And we go from correction to full-blown bear market. We go from correction to calamity, whatever you want to call it. So the key here to understanding where we are today is to understand, hey, what's the underlying fundamental? Because if we're going into a really bad economy, then yeah, the correction that we're in today could get a lot worse, because historically it has. Here are some of these numbers. And this is kind of the worst case scenario for correction is that it's accompanied by a recession. When markets fall in a recessionary period, and this is going back to 1987, the average drop is over 25%. Corrections that are not associated with recessions fall on average only about 14.5%. Significantly different than 25. So you get a period of time where it's about the underlying fundamentals, whether they cave or not, whether there's cracks in the foundations or not. So once we hit bottom, again, we snap back a lot quicker and more ferociously if we are just going through a correction and not a full bear market. So again, let's go back to 1987. No bear market unfolded that wasn't ultimately, we haven't even really had a bear market. We haven't had a bear market, period, unless we were ultimately going into some sort of major recession. So that historically, and there are 19 of these. There are 19 of these. In fact, we've got to look at today. We've got to, really, it's 20. There's 20 of these 10% corrections since 1985 or 1987. There's 20 of them. So bottom line, if the economy holds and doesn't slip into recession, then the correction that we are we're in, or the corrections that we go through, ultimately stay just corrections. And they stay in the 12 to 17% range. And remember, we've already plunged. We were at worst back on Tuesday, we were down 12.5%. And so we need to go through and understand the economic numbers to see, hey, what do the indicators look like today? Are we headed south in a lot of the important economic indicators, or are we headed in the right direction? Because if we're still on a fundamentally sound economy and a fundamentally sound backdrop for stocks, then we can feel more confident that the correction that we're in stays as a correction and not a full-blown bear market or a calamity. Other words, we buy when prices are lower. That's the message here, is that if that's where we stay, we want to be buying when stocks go down, as opposed to just selling and running for the hills. And Now, all of this to say, that's the good news. The bad news is, it doesn't, just because we had a rally on Wednesday and Thursday, it doesn't mean that this is over. It doesn't mean that we don't retest the lows that we hit on Tuesday. It doesn't mean that we don't have an additional 5% beyond where we hit on Tuesday. We were down 12.5%. Hey, historically, we can go down another 5 beyond that and still stay within the normal correction range. So it doesn't mean that this is over. In fact, I doubt highly that it's that easy. A terrible 1 week, then everything gets better and hey, we're back to normal. It doesn't work that way. We have to get enough selling where people to some extent give up. And maybe we did see some of that this week, or maybe we saw it. We don't know. But I don't think it's over just yet. There's going to be more volatility and there's going to be more. We will very well test where we were back on Tuesday. But ultimately, it means if we have cash available and if we have conviction that the next 10 years still are going to be good economically, which I do over time, ultimately, we want to be buyers here, not sellers. And we've got to be able to understand to press on regardless. We've got to stay the course. We've got to be patient because we hopefully are doing all the other things right, like diversification, because, hey, guess what? It just works. All right. With that, the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. I am your host, Wes Moss, and you are listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. News 95.5, AM 750 WSB, 404-872-0750. Joanne joins us from Tucker on the line. Joanne, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
About 3 weeks ago when the market started falling, I decided to stop having my stock being reinvested. So if I need any money, I just take it out of my savings. Is that a good idea?
Meaning, well, what were you doing before? Were you not on dividend reinvest?
I was on dividend. No, I was not. I was taking the money, which would be about between $400 or $500 a month.
So instead of...
And now that money, now my stock is being reinvested. Okay. And so if I need any money, I just take it out of my savings.
So what you're doing here is you're trying to buy
stock
when the market's down as opposed to taking that cash and spending it.
Yes.
Well, good for you. Well, but let me ask you, though, first, Joanne, where are you in this? Are you already retired?
Yes, I've been retired about 15 years.
Wow. All right. And you still have, it sounds like you've got plenty of cushion.
Or do you not? No, I'm okay.
You're okay.
I'm okay.
And so here's a question. You don't have to tell me how much is in these accounts, but what percentage are you taking? If you take $500 a month normally, if you're normally taking $500 a month, which is obviously $6,000 a year, is that a big percentage of you for you, or is
no,
it just the income?
I'm just taking the income.
Just the income.
And not even some of that. Some of my stock is still being just reinvested. So it's just a small portion of my stock that I'm having the stock reinvested now.
If you can afford to do what Joanne's doing. So Joanne, what you're doing here is instead of selling while the market's down, and not necessarily selling because you're living just on your, you're just using dividends. So I don't consider that selling.
Okay.
But the next phase...
Yeah, what I'm doing, I'm buying stock now.
Whereas before you weren't.
That's right.
And I think that's the right thing to do.
Okay.
Through this.
Okay,
I really do.
Then. That's what I wanted to clarify.
I like it, Joanne.
I thank you.
Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. Patrick joins us from Midtown. Patrick, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
So thanks for taking my call. I sort of have a two-part question. The first is, considering what you mentioned earlier in terms of the correction maybe going down a little more, and obviously I'm young, I have like a 20-year time horizon. I do see this as a buying opportunity. Would you recommend continuing to dollar cost average as I have been, or take some cash, of which I have maybe 15% in my 401k as cash, which I've been sort of waiting for a correction, and dump some of that in now?
I would be a little bit more. I would say that either way, you're fine as long as you continue to buy. I don't think it's a perfect answer because I don't know exactly how this plays out on a time frame basis, but I'd be much more inclined to go ahead and get that to work today. Either that or continuing to the DCA in. I think both are good strategies. The key here is to not stop buying in the environment that we're in. I told the story, I'll tell this again straight ahead, the story of Bob, the worst investor you've ever heard of that you've ever heard of in his time.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. We've got to get back to, remember, the whole point of talking about the economy and where we stand today is that corrections that happen in a underlying economy that's not good going into a recession are way worse than corrections that happen in an economy that's relatively stable. We get corrections in both environments. They just get a lot worse when the underpinnings of the economic data, which again flow through to how companies perform and what their earnings look like, it gets a lot worse. Markets get a lot worse when you go into recession. And I don't think there's anything that doesn't seem to be some amazing discovery, but the numbers behind it of what I'd studied this week are pretty telling. Your average market is negative 25% when we're getting a correction going into if it's associated with a bear market or a recession. The corrections are a lot more benign when the economic underpinnings are solid. So I want to go through some of those economic indicators, compare today with 2006, a year before the wheels really started to fall off. There were lots of signs that was happening. So we're going to go through that here on Money Matters. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's do a couple calls and we'll get to the fundamental underpinnings of this economy and how we compare today versus pre-financial crisis 2007-2008. Because again, the question you're asking yourself is, hey, is this just a correction or is it a crash or a calamity? And we've got the economic underlying data to answer that question here on Money Matters today. So stay tuned for that. We will go to the phones here. Let's start Jeff, who joins us in Milburn. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
I'm doing. I've been listening or watching. Hold on. Let me get off speaker.
Please do. There we go. Better. I like it.
Okay.
That's much better, Jeff. What's your question? Well, he said shucks. At least it wasn't a full-on expletive.
I've been listening or watching Motley Fool, and I'm just wondering, are they as good as they say they are?
Are they? Okay.
I
got you. Yeah, Motley Fool is a very... Jeff, Motley Fool, you're going to want to listen through your radio here. I'll answer your question, but our connection isn't great. But here's my answer. Motley Fool has been a very good financial resource for investors for a very long time. I would say Motley Fool has probably been around at least 20 years, ever since I can remember, maybe longer. And they've done a really good job of educating investors on the good, solid fundamentals of being an investor over time. And a lot of those fundamentals are things that get forgotten and get dismissed because we get emotional about investing and fear takes over and then greed takes over. And this is pendulum that we always have to deal with. And Motley Fool has been a good financial resource over many years. That's, I would say, it's in the level-headed category. It's not one of these doom and gloom newsletters that get paid to scare you. And there's a lot of those out there, a lot of them out there. And really they've been very objective because they didn't manage money for a very, very long time. So they're really just a objective resource. Now, they started in the last few years, recently managing money as well. So they're in the investment advisory business now as well. And for a fee, and I don't even know the exact fee, it's probably kind of a 1% management fee, they've opened up their own pseudo mutual fund. They call them separately managed accounts, but it'd be very much like your own private mutual fund. And The answer is they're new doing this. So the jury's still out. The answer is I don't know, because they don't even know. There's no track. There's not a real track record, at least that I know of, to speak of. Now, if you know otherwise and you've been investing with Motley Fool for the last 15 years and I don't know about it, then I'd love to hear from you and let us know something that if we're not familiar with this. But from what I know about Motley Fool is that it's a pretty new... it's a pretty new service that they have. There's an article that goes back to last summer where they're saying they're expanding wealth management division with separately managed accounts. So again, a lot of what they do, from what I can tell, is from the money management side, it's new. So the jury's still out. But from an informational resource, I have always thought of them as a pretty darn objective place to go, and I like that. So I don't know exactly how it's going to play out over the next several years, but they are a non-sensational financial outlet, and that's typically a pretty good sign. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. Do we have time, Ryan, for a call before we get to economic data? Ryan says yes. So he's driving the call ship. Bill joins us on the line. Bill, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Morning, Wes. Appreciate what you do. I'm up in Alpharetta. I know you work at Wella. I've known Paul Scudarelli for quite a while.
Oh, cool.
And I was affiliated with a Norcross-based RIA, which ran a non-correlated mutual fund, and just wondering what you think of non-correlated or alternative funds in this economic market environment.
So let me translate Bill's comments just for a second here, Bill. So let me just do a little Latin translation. Let me pull out Siri and see if she can translate for our listeners. So what Bill's asking about here, there is a whole group of what are called alternative assets or alternative investments. And really, those are assets that are not just long the market. Like most mutual funds are trying to pick stocks that go up over time. Pretty simple. That is the modus operandi for thousands of mutual funds. There's a separate category that is trying to effectively not lose a bunch of money. So they're hedged, meaning that they'll be long markets and short at the same time. They will follow trends and they'll try to be long they'll own stocks and they do well when they go up, and they'll try to do that, and that might be a week or a month, and then they'll short stocks. Or you have alternative investments that are multiple different hedge funds or currency funds or trading funds or commodity funds. And those would be called alternative funds of funds. And they're really there not for outsized gains. You don't own these alternative investments or alternative mutual funds or alternative hedge funds to make a whole lot of money. You own them for really more preservation of capital, number one. And number two, you own them so that they're not correlated. And that was the other buzzword that Bill was saying. That just means they don't hold hands and always go in the exact same direction as your normal long mutual funds or typical mutual fund. It goes up with the market or down with the market. If they're alternatives and they are, quote, non-correlated, is a fancy way of saying it doesn't matter to the fund or the underlying performance what happens in the market. Non-correlated just means, hey, market could go up and this fund could go up or could go down. Market could go down and this fund or an alternative, a true alternative non-correlated fund could follow the market or not follow the market, but you own it or you own these alternative investments as a way to not be fully exposed, everything you own, with the market going up and down. And that's why they're a very real part of investing. And really what I see investors as family offices use these, families that have $20 million, $200 million, $500 million, they start to really utilize these alternative classes because they're, to some extent, the families of that level of wealth, they don't necessarily need to make any money in a certain portion of their investment strategy. They just don't want to lose. And it's a nice way to not have everything tied to the S&P 500 going up or down. So I guess to answer your question, Bill, I'm a believer in them if your risk tolerance says, hey, I'm okay without going up 100% along with the market. I really want a piece of my investments to just stay stable and they maybe make a little bit over time. They might even lose a little bit over time, but for the most part, it adds to my overall diversification. You just got to have the expectation that when market goes up 20% in a good year, your alternative investment funds will likely lag way behind. Okay, we're going to go to, I've got to get to the point here where we go through some of these quick economic numbers. Thesis here today, question is, look, I know that corrections can happen in any economic environment, good economy, bad economy, but they get really bad historically. And the numbers going back to 1987 clearly say that corrections are a lot worse in the stock market when they're associated with a bad economy or recession, period. If we've got a correction and it's associated with an economy that is underlying fundamentally relatively strong, not going down or not going in the wrong direction, then those corrections are short-lived and more shallow, period. So I went back with the Money Matters team this week and looked at all the indicators back in 05, 06, 07 to compare them to today to see if anything is showing up. Are there cracks in the economic foundation for the U.S. economy? So I looked at PMI manufacturing data, payroll numbers, real disposable personal income, average hourly earnings, consumer confidence, housing starts, housing prices, mortgage delinquency. This one is a real, this is very telling. Mortgage delinquencies, 30, 60, 90 day late payments, really starting to spike in the mid 2006, well before we got into a recession. It was a really good indicator that things were going to start to go bad. They were getting ready to get ready to be bad. Household debt ratio spiked from 2004 all the way to 2007 and 8. All the economic indicators I just talked about, debt ratios, mortgage delinquencies, housing data, confidence data, manufacturing data, every single one of those indicators I just mentioned was flashing an orange light or even some red lights back in 06 and 07. None of that is happening today. None of these factors, in fact, a lot of these factors are doing just the opposite, and they're actually in the continuing to improve category. So at least right now, and for at least the next year, we're not going into a recession. Now, China is still a problem, and they continue to have a difficult economy, and a bad China is bad for commodities, but we don't sell to China. We barely sell anything to China. And the fact that they're slowing down, it's a big part of why commodity prices are lower and oil prices are lower. That's good for us. So this is what gives me confidence in where we stand today. The underlying economic backdrop, the tie to this economy, the foundation of this economy is still in the solid camp. We're not falling off a cliff, at least anytime soon. You are listening to Money Matters. You want to find me and the Money Matters team? Easy to do so. I'll get back to you via email. You can just go to my website, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button on the left-hand side. I will get back to you. Those come straight to me and the Money Matters team. We'll get back to you within a day or two or three, depending on how crazy the week is. And more Money Matters straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters as we wrap up this Sunday morning after the most volatile week in the stock market since the financial crisis. Ryan Ely, WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack.
The WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack, this is a big one, so hold on to your hats, is a pair of tickets to see Kelly Clarkson in concert September 10th at Aaron's Amphitheater at Lakewood, a four-pack of tickets to the Georgia RV and Camper Show September 11th through the 13th at the North Atlanta Trade Center, and a pair of tickets to see comedian Seth MacFarlane with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra on September 18th at Symphony Hall. This week's trivia question, can you tell me the name of the first steam-powered ship to cross the Atlantic? It left the Savannah Harbor and headed for England, the first steam-powered ship. It's a very Georgia-centric answer, is your hint.
You know what it is? Ryan Ely has been sneaking in his Civil War history books over the weekend. Historian, if you will.
Trying to stay well-rounded.
404-741-0750, the prize line. We'll post the answer to you on Facebook. Wes Moss Money Matters. We'll tweet it out at WesMoss365 if you are on Twitter. A lot happening this week. We've got manufacturing data that comes out. We've got vehicle sales coming out on Tuesday. And then the non-farm payroll number, jobs day this coming Friday. We'll see if we get another 200,000 jobs, which is expected. So stay tuned for that. Me and the Money Matters team, find us at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Radio@yourwealth.com is the email. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday. Stay tuned for Adam Goldfein right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.